mindfulness mode.
It would begin to catapult us a little bit into a better way of being throughout the day.
Hey, Mindful Tribe, welcome back to the show. Welcome to Mindfulness Mode. I'm here today with an accomplished entrepreneur. He's a consultant, he's an executive coach, and he's an author. He's an author of his first book called Space to Breathe Again, Hope for the Overloaded and Overwhelmed. And wow, I really feel like we need this book. We really need to talk about this topic. And I think this is going to be a very interesting topic because my guest, Tommy Thompson, is a Christian and he's a person who writes a lot in the Christian space and also space that is not Christian. So we'll be able to talk about mindfulness and how that dovetails into all of this. Tommy, good to have you here. Are you in mindfulness mode today?
I am constantly working on it, constantly striving. So the whole my whole book is because I desperately needed it myself. So always struggling in our culture with overwhelm and overload and trying to kind of center into mindfulness mode.
Yeah, there's so much of that feeling of overwhelm. So what does mindfulness mean to you, Tommy?
Yeah, there are several words I would probably think about when I think of mindfulness. I think of being centered. For me, I'm aware internally when I feel a centeredness kind of in my gut, like, okay, I'm understanding, I'm in the presence that I want to be in. I also think of presence. And when I think of that, I think of really the word single. When I am mindful, I am fully doing just one thing, thinking about one thing. I'm not cluttered with all sorts of random external forces kind of going at my mind, pulling at me, trying to take me in different directions. So in the midst of being busy, I think the challenge of being mindful is to be singular. Mm-hmm. In what you're doing. So when I think of mindfulness, I think of being single in the moment, whether it's having lunch with a friend or working on a project or just taking time for myself or sitting down with my wife. It's, can I be fully present, single in that moment?
Yeah, that's a good point. And you have a podcast, and I've listened to your podcast. It's really excellent. It's called Space for Life. Did it take you a long time to come up with that title?
Not really, because it came about after, or kind of concurrent with the book, Space to Breathe Again. Mm-hmm. And all of that was really a culmination of decades of realizing that one of the most absent ingredients in people's lives and often in my own life is just that space to breathe. And we talk about a lot of other things, but at the core of, to me, almost all of the good things we want in life is this ingredient of space, of having some breathing room. Often I talk about the powerful pauses that we need just in between meetings and in between thoughts. And so the concept of space is one that's just been kind of core to me for 30 plus years, really coming out of a spaceless place that I felt like almost took me under. In my early entrepreneurial days when I was running four companies and just had too much going on. And so this concept of space has kind of just been a fundamental principle for my life. So Space for Life was a pretty natural way of framing pretty much everything that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Well, being a Christian and a person who writes in that Christian space, I know that sometimes people hear the word mindfulness and they think, well, that doesn't really feel right when it comes to Christianity. How do you feel about that? Mindfulness as it relates to Christianity?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think I would say I believe that what is typically talked about with mindfulness is absolutely at the center of Christian faith and of a relationship with God, as well as good relationships with other people. You know, I think of Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. What better description of mindfulness? But unfortunately, I think the word mindfulness with a lot of the Christian community is associated at its core with Eastern religions.
Yes.
For which people don't know in the Christian community exactly what to do with that.
Yes.
Is that therefore something that's anti-Christian, or is it compatible, complementary? And so in my opinion, I think the place to go is to see the truth in it, mm-hmm. Regardless of where the necessary origins were or where the origins are in a personal, and is there some truth that can bring life to people and that we need to hear? And in my opinion, it's very compatible with so many principles within the Christian life, necessary principles that I think too many Christians have lost along the way. So I understand the apprehensions that are there, and to some degree, I'd love to dispel them.
Yeah, well, I would too. You know, I think that that's something we need to talk a lot about. How can we do that? How can we dispel those myths? How can we convince people that it's okay to talk about mindfulness, okay to maybe explore Eastern religions a little bit and what they represent?
Yeah, well, I do think there is, sometimes people outside of a faith community can bring a lot of truth to a faith community, whether it's from another religion or just from a good thought. I listen to a lot of personal development podcasts, mm-hmm. and self-help podcasts, and often they have a way of communicating something that's true that engages me in a fresh way. And then as I hear that, I go, oh, I now see something that's in the Bible from a different light. That's what is meant there. So it helps recast, but truth is truth, regardless of where it's come from. But I think that hopefully with things like this podcast, with Space for Life, with the book that I'm reading that I wrote, people can begin to see that this concept of space is really at the core of our relationship to God, and that if we don't create space in our lives, God can't fit in. Mm. God, and if we don't create space in our relationships will choke and suffer.
Yeah. You know,
if we don't create space, we're not going to live out our full purpose. We're just going to run frantically around. And I realize that, my personality, I'm fairly driven in terms of what I do. It's what I have to remind myself of constantly. It's where the best of me comes out, is when I'm coming out of a place of spaciousness in my life. And so it's a core of my daily practices, my weekly practices, my annual practices. I live it out in many ways, very practical ways, and that's what I hope to bring to people.
Well, Tommy, I really think of you as a relationship expert, and a lot of that is because, a while ago you wrote a whole 1-year program on marriage and helping people in their marriages. So just by writing that program, I'm sure it helped you become a person that really understands relationships better. What do you think some of the biggest problems are in relationships these days?
Well, I think to some degree, some of the problems are the same problems that we're facing as a culture. I think we are stressed out people. We're overloaded. We're way too busy. And even when we're not busy, we're highly, highly distracted. And, I like to think of myself as a fairly decent person, but when I'm stressed out, when I'm completely overloaded, I'm not a very nice person to be around. And I think too many marriages are suffering, not necessarily because the people are incompatible or that they're not good people, but they're working in their marriages in the lowest quartile of who they are. They're coming home from work exhausted. They're coming home impatient because they have no gas left in the tank. And so they're giving each other the worst of themselves. And if you do that day after day, week after week, and you're completely stressed out, then you think your marriage is falling apart, but you're just actually not operating as the best that you could be. So I think at the core, you want to begin to look at the life of the marriage and say, are there some fundamental core things that need to happen that you can create space for each other, that you're not always running on empty, that you can offer the best listening that you have available. And certainly there are skills, listening skills that are important. Lots of healing in people that needs to happen. But I do kind of come back to, if you're running 1,000 miles an hour, both of you're probably not going to have a very fulfilling marriage.
Right. Makes sense. Tommy, in your book, Space to Breathe Again, I'm curious, what was the most surprising feedback you got?
This book is kind of, it's my first book, so it's kind of a hybrid. There's a lot of memoir in it. Tell a lot of the story that led to my writing Space to Breathe Again, which was my own overload and overwhelm, and also tell a lot of the story of how space was so critical for my wife and I when we underwent a long journey of my daughter being diagnosed with stage 4 kidney cancer at age 20, and how space was critical for navigating that storm. What perhaps surprised me is that with all of that element, people so appreciated the practical elements of the book, which I guess as a coach is a very natural thing for me. So, I didn't want to just put out there that space is important. I wanted to say, okay, what's a practical way you can put this into practice, begin to put it in practice right now? So next time you're in the car, let's drive without the radio on. It might feel very uncomfortable to you, but you're creating a little space. Let's show up a couple minutes early and just settle before you go into that next meeting. You're creating space. It's not changing anything, but and people I found really resonated with those that practical help instead of just the aspiration to live a less stressed life, the practical help for how do you get there.
Yeah, those key takeaways are really, really important, I think, in a book, because you can really hone in on those specific pieces of advice. And then also you have breathing exercises in there as well. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, it just fit in so perfectly kind of to the concept of space to breathe again. And I realized as I kind of came up with that title and that way of framing things that, you know, when I'm stressed out, I don't breathe well.
Right.
You know, my breathing gets real short, shallow, almost as if I'm not breathing. And so I had, in the midst of all of the different things that I tried to do to learn to create space in my life, I actually had to learn how to breathe. And so all of a sudden that became, well, that's a great way of framing the practical takeaways from each chapter, is to say, these are breathing exercises. We're learning how to breathe again.
Yeah. Well, we do sometimes have to learn how to do some of the most basic things again. I know one of the reviews that someone left for your book, they said that reading your book literally changed the way their day started and ended, because they were able to just take what you advised in there. How does your day start and end?
Yeah, that's it just does such good to my heart to hear that, because that's such a practical and I think critical piece to living well, is beginning the day well and ending the day well. And I call that framing the day. You know, so you think of a painting and you think of how much a frame enhances a painting. And so I think of framing the day. And so both my wife and I begin our days with probably, and this is not where everybody else is, this is our stage of life, but, you know, between an hour and a half and 2 hours of just quiet. Mm-hmm. During that time, we journal. During that time, we pray. We read the Bible, sometimes some other devotionals. But we sit and we center ourselves around all of the things that happened the day before that we need to process, all of the things that we're facing for the day, and we prepare ourselves. We prepare our hearts and our mind, and we center in with God during that time. And that has become the most fundamental piece of our days. It's like, as long as we can get that, and we'll get up as early as necessary in order to have that amount of space, 4:30, 5:30, whatever it takes, so that we're not rushed in the morning, because that sets the stage for the rest of the day. And then if we can close down the day, which I think is also sometimes missed with people, mm-hmm. with a slow down process of reading, of just quieting down before the lights go out, it just helps. You know, if you can do that, you can kind of handle a lot of craziness within a day.
Yeah.
So, you know, you begin and you end the right way, and you punctuate a day with some powerful pauses, some just short slowdown moments, and a really busy full day can go really nicely.
I think that's great. I really do, because, yeah, I think social media and our phones has gotten the way of that so much. You know, a lot of people wake up and the first thing they're checking their phone, or just before they go to sleep, you know, looking on social media or whatever. What advice do you have for people when it comes to this world of phones and social media?
Yeah, it's a huge thing. And it, even all these years down the road, it continues to be a challenge, yeah. to me, particularly, you know, as an author or a podcaster, both of those, you know, you need to be involved at some level in promoting what you're doing and letting people know, which throws you into the social media world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my advice is you do whatever it takes. You do whatever level of surgery is necessary to get it in line. And so for years, I'm not currently doing this, but for years, I would use the downtime feature on the iPhone that would literally cut off access to all of the apps at a certain hour. So I would set it for 9 o'clock. I'd say at 9 o'clock, it's lights out in terms of that phone until 6 o'clock the next morning. And so that simple act took away the temptation. And at some level, I go, well, you shouldn't need something like that. Well, I'm sorry. I'm a sick person. I need that. So, you know, if that's what it takes to deal with a distraction, you do it.
Sure.
You know, and so, you know, I always have my phone in another room when I go upstairs for bed. We've got to do these practical external things, because as much as we'd like to think we have the internal strength and motivation, sometimes that has to grow before we're there.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I always ask a question about bullying on the show because I've worked in that field for a long time. Do you have a story about bullying where mindfulness would have made a difference?
Boy, a story about bullying. You know, I was bullied. I think you could use that word in grade school and high school, because I was one of the youngest in my class, and I was small, and I'm an introvert, kind of quiet by nature. Mm-hmm. And so I was easy prey for those who kind of wanted to exert themselves, so to speak. I think there were many instances where, had I stepped back, sometimes perhaps with the support of others, but stepped back and realized the emptiness that was behind the bullying, I could have perhaps allowed it to not have such a deep effect on me. But that's a really difficult thing to ask a young person to do in the midst of it. But I don't think I think I actually fed the flame of it by trying to push against it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So much. So, you know, if you get a good reaction out of someone, then, you know, it feeds getting more reaction. Where had I been able to, and mindfulness maybe could have helped with this, had I been able to step back and laugh and realize this is kind of meaningless, that might have helped me.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, it is really true. To be able to step back is sometimes the most important thing in a lot of different areas of life, that's for sure. As we move forward in the interview, Tommy, I want to ask you 5 quick answer questions. So just 30-second answers are perfect. The first one is this. Okay. Who is one person who has been a powerful mindfulness influence for you?
Powerful mindfulness influence. I think in a lot of ways, I'd say my brother, my older brother, Mike. He's about 6 or 7 years older. And so he was someone that I always looked up to, a person of, you know, incredible faith and centeredness, you know. And so there was always a very obvious present calm in him that informed who I wanted to be. And whether he would have used that word or not, I don't necessarily know. He's a counselor by profession, but he was one that his presence in a room always infused, that settled the room in terms of who he was. And so he was someone that I always aspired to.
Very good. Well, let's talk about emotions. How has mindfulness affected how you deal with your emotions?
It's huge in terms of emotions for me. I think, one, because I'm fairly centered in my mind. And so, you know, really being open and aware of my emotions is not the most natural thing to me. And were I not to create the space and the opportunity to acknowledge and receive the emotions, I don't know what I would do. I would obviously not be handling those as well. And that was particularly critical when my daughter was diagnosed with cancer. My wife and I, we really doubled down on that early morning time.
Yeah.
Because we knew there was so much that we had to process, so many emotions, so much stress. And so rather than running from that with busyness, which I think was the temptation, we settled down more and more. And I think it really is what allowed us to survive, you know, an incredibly difficult 6.5 year journey of her with the cancer and the grief that we've had to deal with since then. And I think both my wife and I would say that. But I think for me, emotions do not come as naturally. I want to be strong through emotions, which, you know, doesn't always work.
Yeah, right. Yeah, for sure. Well, we're back to breathing again. My next question is about breathing, and you've talked about it a bit. And of course, your book is Space to Breathe Again. So what short comments would you have about breathing that you can kind of sum it up?
Well, I think the simple awareness and practice of regular deep breathing is a powerful de-stressor and a powerful recentering exercise. So, you know, one of my passions in life is golf, and I have started to play a little bit more competitive golf. So as I step on to now every tee, I take 2 or 3 deep breaths. So all of the pressure that's related to it, I can feel it dissipate through my body, and I'm now prepared to hit a golf shot. I think that example can be true for business meetings, for difficult conversations, for just the stress that we feel just in the moment by moment of life, of just learning to take a deep breath and let it out. 2 or 3 times is all it takes. So I still have to very intentionally practice that after all these years.
Right, right. Are there any other books you would recommend besides your own book, Space to Breathe Again?
Yeah, you know, what started my whole journey of realizing the need for space way back in roughly 1990, was reading a book by Richard Swenson called Margin. Oh. And it's a phenomenal book. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time he introduced to me, as a Christian, the thought that God did not want for us to live overwhelmed, stressed out lives. I was looking at life like, I just need to serve more. I just need to buck up and go harder and be stronger and rely on God more. And so I kept on pushing and pushing till I was way over the edge. And he introduced the thought that, no, this is not what God desires, you know? And that opened up the floodgates for me. It's a powerful book about the forces of culture, even written back in 1990, pre-smartphones, and the internal angst that we have.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any apps that you recommend? Do you use any apps at all?
Other than I use the features within the iPhone, like the downtime and
which is a good app to be thinking about in relation to mindfulness, that's for sure.
Oh, it absolutely is, because if we could artificially get the smartphones out of our purview, half the battle would be won. And that's a simple way of doing that. I think some of the other apps like Calm are good. I've just found, I think because I practiced this for a while, that I don't need that external app to help me get there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, as we wrap up the interview, I wonder if you have any final words of advice for us, Tommy.
Well, thanks. This has really been fun. It's been great to get to meet you and get to know you, and I really appreciate the opportunity. I think I would go back to, you know, your comment and the comment that you said someone wrote about my book about the importance of starting our day the right way. I think that if we took that practical step, even though it might be uncomfortable, even though we may not know exactly what to do with the time, but we just created that space and started off the day with 30 minutes of some quiet and some reflection, prayer, whatever, I think it would begin to catapult us a little bit into a better way of being throughout the day. So I think I would say that. The one other thing I would say is I've really come to believe in the practice of a weekly review, mm-hmm. which is once a week, I take a few minutes, it doesn't take a long time, a few minutes extra set to center myself as to what the week ahead is about, what I'm going to be facing, what I want to accomplish, what happened, to reflect on a weekly basis. And that's a little bit more manageable frame of time to deal with. And I found that practice of that weekly review and a few things that I do within that has been a real game changer for me.
Good advice. Yeah, well, it's certainly been great to meet you, and I'm really pleased that you could come on the podcast, Mindfulness Mode. So thanks again, Tommy.
Thank you so much, Bruce. Appreciate everything you're doing.
Thanks. All the best to you. Bye now.
Great. Bye-bye.
Hey, Mindful Tribe, thanks for joining me today. I wanted to point out that my recent episode with Lindsay Rind, it was an episode that really meant a lot to me because Lindsay is a person who was having a lot of challenges. She was having anxiety. She was having pain. She was having stress. And I worked with her using hypnosis and coaching and took her to the other side of that. And I would really encourage you to go and listen to her story because it was quite powerful. And I'm just so grateful to have the opportunity to have had clients like Lindsay whom I can help them, I can work with them using hypnosis, and maybe you or a friend of yours or a connection to you is experiencing anxiety, stress, some sort of feeling as though they're stuck, they can't move forward. And you know, hypnosis can be something that can resolve that rather quickly. And it is really a powerful way to deal with some of these challenges in life. So send me an email if you're interested, or pass on my name to a friend or a relative that you might know who is experiencing some of these challenges. My email is bruce@mindfulnessmode.com, and I'd be thrilled to sit down and have a free consultation with you or the person you're suggesting, and we can work through this, and there can be a solution, there can be a better way to live. So with that, take what we've learned today to reach new heights of calm, focus, and happiness. Stay in the mode.